Jack Graham is a senior partner and board chair at McGinnis Cooper, which is among the 25 largest law firms in Canada and the largest in Atlantic Canada. Twice named Lawyer of the Year in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Jack is also a past chair of the board of Tennis Canada and serves on the board of the International Tennis Foundation. In 2020, Jack was chosen to be inducted into the Tennis Canada Hall of Fame as a builder. Jack is also the founder and chair of the board of the Sobeys Atlantic Tennis Center. Those are just a few of Jack's many achievements. Jack the winner, welcome to Down 40 Love.
Thanks, Rennie. Well, delighted to be here and delighted to have met you recently and read some of the work that you're doing in this space. I think it's really impressive and quite energizing, frankly.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Let's jump right in. I mean, how does a former hockey player turn into this highly competitive tennis player and end up getting into the Hall of Fame?
Look, it's everybody has their own journey in tennis and their own story, but there are a lot of common things in everybody's story, probably the most common thing is that somebody took an interest in me and brought me to the tennis courts. And for some people, it's parents. In my case, it was a friend who I had a connection in ice hockey with. And I wasn't an early starter. I came to the tennis courts as a 12-year-old. And as we know, these days, a lot of people start when they're 7 or 8 years old. So, I was put in a competition on day one, and I really enjoyed the fact that in tennis, unlike baseball, which all my friends were trying out for, you got to hit the ball every time it comes over the net, which was pretty interesting to me. Not just every 15 minutes or 20 minutes or what have you. And I've had a fascinating journey in tennis. From a very small community in Nova Scotia, one of the smaller provinces in Canada, in a community that had only four tennis courts. None of those tennis courts were regulation size or regulation built. But because I took to the game, I was kind of recognized by some of the local coaches and then some provincial coaches, and then started playing competition at age 13 and had kind of five pretty intense years playing junior tennis under some pretty good coaching. However, it was a very seasonal sport for me. It was 3 months of the year. So I was trying to learn this game for three, maximum 4 months. Never had winter tennis. In fact, the first year that I really played winter tennis was when I was a pro at an indoor club. So from junior tennis, I often say to people, my only job before I got full-time in tennis, and frankly, until the 80s, was tennis. I worked all my summers in tennis. My first job out of university as an economics grad was running tennis in the province of Nova Scotia. Then I worked as a pro at an indoor club and then left tennis for a couple of years, worked in politics. But I always stayed in tennis. And the part of it that I was most excited about through my years was in the coaching side. And I ended up getting some really good opportunities to do coaching development as a course conductor for the Canadian coaching program. And when I left tennis full time and decided to go to law school in the mid 80s, Tennis Canada hired me to write coaching manuals. They were rewriting three manuals in the space of two summers while I was in law school. I was a coaching manual writer, and when they were redeveloping the program, so I wrote three manuals, and that's what really put me on a more of a national stage of, and recognizing that my contributions. As a good tennis player, not a great tennis player. I wasn't part of the establishment in Canadian tennis, but I felt that I had something to offer because I really got the coaching side. And then one thing led to another, and I volunteered at the at the local level. I was asked to join the board at Tennis Canada, and that led to various other opportunities to really kind of change the face of Canadian tennis. So it's been a fascinating journey. It's been frankly, a really rewarding journey for me personally and my own personal growth and development.
What was it about coaching that fired you up?
I believed that good coaches have the potential greatest impact on the two main parts of what we try to do in tennis: making the game easier and more enjoyable, and pursuing the kind of excellence side. So as we often refer to it at the International Tennis Federation, more players and better players. And I really believed in the power of coaches to turn people onto the game, to make a difficult game easier and much more enjoyable. And also, when I saw the progress of the athletes that I worked with on a more performance side, and the progress that they could make, again, most of them playing more seasonally. And when I saw the enjoyment that adults or even kids who never went on to play competitively had in this lifelong game, I thought, gosh, this is exciting. In some ways, I got a bigger charge out of coaching than I did out of playing.
Why is that?
Because I figured that I was good at it. And I was a decent tennis player. But I actually really thought, certain people have certain gifts. I figured out, I could understand and figure out how the kind of physical development, mental development, technical development of a player worked. And I was quickly introduced to a bunch of people that were on, at that time, I thought, kind of particularly in my early 20s, on the leading edge of developing systematic coaching programs. Some of them in Canada, some of them in the U.S., early introduction to the people at the Vandermeer program. And then there were some real pioneers in Canada that were doing some very interesting things when I started developing the coaching manuals. That so I was able to translate some of these concepts pretty well into written material that people seem to make sense.
So who were some of your early mentors, or maybe some coaches on a national level within Canada, or maybe globally, that you look to or maybe you learned from as you were growing as a coach?
Look, I would say there are kind of probably about three people. As a kid growing up, I had a coach in Nova Scotia who really got it. And of all the people I've ever met in tennis, he's probably still among the best. But he kind of understood players, he understood teams, he understood athlete development, and he was a good athlete himself. But he just absolutely got it. He was a fellow by the name of Bob Pierce. Then when I started getting exposed to doing national coaching development work there, and the Vandermeer people, there was a guy who actually still works in tennis in the States for the Midtown organization, by the name of Butch Staples. And Butch and I worked a lot on the national coaching program. It was a very conservative group of people when we joined the national coaching committee that didn't want to take chances, that were stuck in the past. And the third person who I think was a big influence on me was a fellow by the name of Louis Caille. And Louis ran the coaching certification program in Canada for a long time and is a real innovator, now works for the Lawn Tennis Association, Great Britain. He's written a lot. He's a doubles coach specialist, one of the best in the world. And Louis was in the early stages of developing the actions method. And I think he had a real significant influence on me. But I had these great two summers, Rene, where I did nothing but read tennis books, every tennis book that was available. I really liked a lot of the things that Vandermeer was doing at the time, but I was reading Dick Gould, I was reading anything that I could get my hands on because I was trying to incorporate so much of this stuff into what we were trying to do in Canada.
So I'm laughing because A, I want to back up, and in the introduction, I said International Tennis Foundation, and it's actually International Tennis Federation. Although we are quite aware of your philanthropic work, across the board, it's the International Tennis Federation. The second thing is, on every podcast with a tennis thought leader, Dick Gould's name gets mentioned. So, you've given me another reason to send Coach Gould an email and drop him a quick line.
I loved his book. I loved his first book,
Tennis
which was
Anyone?
fantastic. Yeah.
Tennis Anyone. Yeah. That was the
Simple.
first book that I was introduced to as well. And the methodology, and I worked with Dick for an entire summer earlier in my coaching career. And, his teaching methodology I adopted. And I always say I probably made the most money, out of anyone who learned that system. Just took it and just, brought it into the 21st century. And I am always very appreciative to Coach Gould for that. Let's pivot to the power of tennis, but not so much because you got it right away, right? You made that pivot, from hockey into tennis. You loved the engagement, and I, from what I've heard from you, I think your competitiveness was sparked when you saw how you could help people get better. My guess is that you took it as a challenge to see how fast you could get your students and players to get to the next level. Talk to us about the power of tennis today, from the professional ranks, maybe on down, to change people's lives and to really give participants and athletes in particular a platform and a set of life skills that they can use for the rest of their lives.
I probably didn't describe it in the way that I would describe it now when I was a teenager in my 20s and 30s about the power of tennis to change people's lives. But I actually believe it, and I've talked about it a lot in many different contexts, in the Canadian context, in the international context. So, I'm fortunate to have been elected to the ITF board on six separate occasions. I'm the longest serving member of the world governing body, and we're now just coming to realize the health benefits of tennis alone. It's the healthiest sport in the world. There's a ton of data, and it's not just healthy physically, it's healthy mentally, and it changes people's lives because if you're playing tennis regularly, you adopt healthy lifestyles. You're a better decision maker. You have, and I'm, look, I'm the poster child for changing your lives. I've benefited massively. I can play tennis in any country of the world. I know people, and I have. Every time I go to another country, I play tennis with whoever is there. So, but even on a local level or a regional level, there is something about this game, both the physical component, the mental component, the psychological component, that creates healthy people. If you do it right, and I will stress that particularly on the psychological, mental side, if you do it right, then I think it has enormous power to change people's lives for the benefit, and they change their lives physically. Change their lives emotionally and the way they meet people and their ability to play this sport their entire lives. When I advocate for tennis, I say, what other sport in the world can you start at age 5 and you can still compete internationally at age 85? There is none. It's not even close. And it's global. It's absolutely global. So there are lots of great sports, but there is nothing like tennis. And that's why it can change people's lives, because it is lifelong, and because of the of what it teaches you, and what the habits that it if you continue to play and be involved, the habits that it develops in you as well.
So, in tennis development, Jack, define three keys to quote unquote doing it right. What does that mean, doing it right?
Doing it right is, you know, there's first kind of a mindset. It's the mindset of why do I do this? Why, you know, why do I want to be involved for the physical, emotional, psychological reasons? That the why is a critical piece of it. The second piece of it, when I say doing it right, it's all the people doing it right. Why are you involved in sport? And kind of understanding what tennis gives and what you have to give back. And that's a piece of the virtuous circle that not everybody recognizes. And that's kind of a story that I've been trying to tell people for a long time, whether they live locally or elsewhere. We tend to have a lot of people that like to play tennis, but they have an obligation. Everybody's involved in a sport that's changed their lives has an obligation to give back. Whether you are Roger Federer or you are a local club person that's still playing at age 70 or 75 years old, you have an obligation to give to someone else what they've given to you. And it's also, as I say, the really important social component of this. This is where you develop networks of people, whether they're local or regional or national, or in some cases, I'm lucky because they're international. But I like people to play the game for their personal satisfaction, but recognize that for every hour of satisfaction that you got from this game, you owe it to other people to share that. And that's been a huge part of my mission. I probably haven't played as much as I have been kind of a little bit too preoccupied on the sharing side. But it is a lifelong game, Rene, and I'm going to win the war of attrition as the healthiest person playing in the over 75 division someday.
Now, I love it. And one of my mentors and the first college coach that I worked with and for was Greg Patton. I don't know if you had a chance to meet Greg, former head coach at UC Irvine, and brought that program to top five in the country when nobody had ever heard, of the school. And then he transitioned to Boise State and got Boise State into the top 10 in the country for the first time ever. Greg today, although he's no longer coaching collegiate tennis full time, is playing tennis every single day. It's like he never forgot his roots. He's ha as happy as ever. And it's great to hear, from someone like yourself who's been so involved in so many different ways and at the highest level of tennis from the junior side on up to the professional tour. Jack, let's transition and shift a little bit to your leadership philosophy. You gained all of this valuable experience as a coach and as an athlete, as a teacher, as a mentor, and a writer, and putting together programs. So you sort of grew up thinking strategically and then had this natural propensity to want to share that information in a more formal way. How have you been able to sort of transfer or, lead effectively as an attorney and as a partner at a top law firm? What are some of the commonalities maybe between sports and business? Or just simply share, what's your leadership philosophy?
So I have a leadership philosophy, and I think that there, as a leader of a law firm that has over 225 lawyers in it, And having to, as chair of the firm, having to kind of be ultimately responsible for everyone in the firm, including another 250 staff members. I think law firms and tennis organizations, if you're trying to create something significant, there are some, at least in my view, some really important aspects of leadership. The first is you have to create the vision. It has to be a compelling vision. And whether you're in a law firm, what is it you're trying to achieve in that law firm? Or in my example, you know, trying to improve tennis organizations like Tennis Canada, for example, you have to have a clear vision. And you have to be able to articulate that vision, not only just this is what the end goal is. You know, we started the turnaround at Tennis Canada in the mid-2000s. We said we want to be a world-leading tennis nation. People thought we were crazy. What do you mean a world-leading tennis? What does that mean? We want to be able to win Davis Cup and Fed Cup. People thought we were nuts. We want to be competing at the highest levels in Grand Slams because we didn't have any players that were in the top 100 at the time. So we created this vision, but you have to be able to articulate it with passion. You know, we want to be the best regional law firm in Atlantic Canada. It's the same kind of thing. I think you also have to, you don't just create the vision, you also have to have relentless focus, like the courage to do things differently and relentless focus on your goal. It isn't just, that's the goal, but I don't really know the pathway. You have to create the pathway, have to be really focused. And I believe in that kind of focus area, you also have to be really strategic. I don't think people understand a lot of times what strategic really is. It's making choices, right? We're going to do this. We're not going to do that. When we did the turnaround at it isn't even a turnaround because we were never ahead at Tennis Canada. We never had a golden age. But we were super focused. We said, we want to have top 100 players. We want to have top 50 players. We want to, and this is, and so that means we can't do everything. And that means we also have to make some choices. And they have to be really clear choices. And you also have to have, you can't do it alone. Nothing I've done in tennis or in life has been ever done alone. You have to surround yourself. And this, I see this in a lot of the things in your book. You have to surround yourself with really committed, positive people. I don't have a lot of time for negative energy. I have a lot of time for people that are visionary and passionate and committed. So, and you also have to be able to work through the tough times. And that's you have to persevere. You're not going to get success right away. We had lots of success a lot earlier than we expected in the Tennis Canada journey because we actually developed top 100 players and players that were in a relatively short period of time, players that were competing for Grand Slam titles. But you still have to be resilient. And there's no shortcut. I say this to our lawyers here, you have to work hard. As a leader, you have to work hard. As a participant, you have to work hard. There is absolutely no shortcut. And if you're leading people, you have to tell them. There's very little substitute. You have to be strategic, but very little substitute for hard work. And the other thing that's really important to me, and I'm probably forgetting some things, but the other thing that's important to me is you have to model good values. And you have to expect people to live by good values. And hugely important in our law firm because we deal with complex issues. We deal with a lot of different personalities. We deal with conflict. When you're leading in a tennis organization, you have to live by high values. You have to live by high standards because why are we involved in sport in the first place? We're involved in the sport in the first place, because we want to create better citizens, healthier citizens, because we believe that tennis is a way to make people better and communities better. And if you're not modeling that, if you're modeling, I only care about my kid, I only care about my kid winning, and you're not tying it into that bigger picture, then we're losing the forest for the trees. So those are some of the things that I find that are important to me as a leader, and some of them have worked in some of the, not just the professional, but some of the leadership opportunities that I've had in tennis, they've also worked.
I love that list, and I'll be resharing it back with you so you have it, so you can keep passing it on. It's fantastic. And, you know, my mantra for 25 plus years as a high performance coach and a head coach has been have a vision, believe in the vision, and execute the vision. And so much of your philosophy fits, you know, right in the sweet spot of that mantra. However, what I love about how you just described vision, taking it a step further beyond conception, but operationally defining, you know, what that looks like, in not only in terms of outcomes, but in terms of behaviors and values, like you mentioned. I think that that's so important. And sometimes it's not always an outside-in process. Sometimes, or an inside-out, sometimes it's inside-out, sometimes it's outside-in, meaning, you know, in my day-to-day with our student-athletes, a player will do something, and we didn't necessarily have a rule against that, but it's an immediate, hey, we don't do that here. You know, and that's almost like it's outside-in, you know, like, you want to give your team members latitude, you know, the freedom to grow, the opportunity to make decisions. You want them to feel empowered. That's the outside part. Then sometimes you've got to bring them back in just based on what you see, which is aligned with sometimes an unspoken culture, you know, that you're after. And it shapes from there. Because, I mean, as you know, in collegiate tennis, we have a different team every year. You know, we have it's a gift that we have day ones every year where we start with an absolute clean slate. But at the same time, you know, your culture and those leadership values, they don't change. I mean, they're unchanging. But the personalities that you're working with change, and people's backgrounds change, and how they're motivated and inspired changes. You talked, Jack, or you touched on perseverance, which is a great segue to my next question, which is, what does Down 40 Love mean to you?
So I think, look, nobody that takes on significant projects does so in a way that it's all sunshine and roses. If you don't experience adversity, you're usually not taking on a significant project, frankly. And so it means a bunch of things. And, you know, I kind of move back and forth between some of the experiences I had with tennis. So I'll give you my first example is this one. In a week, I became chairman of Tennis Canada in 2003. As I mentioned before, we didn't have a single player in the top 100 at that time. We were playing Davis Cup and Billie Jean King Cup, largely in the zonal groups. We had not much success. We weren't, and you talk about turnarounds in your book, we weren't a turnaround. We were trying to create something. And I know in the early stages of that creation, I had a dinner one night at when we had our Rogers Cup tournament with a couple of our former players. And they said to me, and I'm not part of the tennis establishment, but they said to me, look, we're just not a tennis country. We're just not. I mean, we're a hockey country. We're not really a tennis country. It's too cold. You know, our citizens are spread along 5,000 miles and so on. And not only that, we faced a real down Love 40 situation at our board at the time, because we just built a new stadium. in Toronto, $50 million, where we host our tournaments. We own our two tournaments. We own our facilities. And probably the single biggest change or issue that came to us was, what do we do with our money, our surpluses from the tournament? Do we pay down the debt or do we invest in tennis development? And there was a legitimate debate. And you can imagine where I was, and I was the incoming chair of the board. And it was legitimate to pay to potentially pay down the debt. And I just said, look, I and others said, we can't wait for development. We're nowhere in the tennis world. We are absolutely nowhere. Let's just be clear. We've had some good people do well sporadically. We had some good doubles success, but we're not a tennis nation. We have to absolutely invest. And it took some real convincing for people because they weren't entirely sure we could accomplish this. So we were in a hole and we got out of a hole. And that was a wonderful experience because, as I said, everybody knows the story of Canadian tennis now. You know, it is one of the great stories nationally, internationally in the last 15 years. Canada went from absolutely nowhere to being a serious tennis country and won Davis Cup, won Billie Jean King Cup, etc. So it's that situation where you're in a hole, when things aren't going well. You may have taken on a project that's too big. One of my real passion project, I've had lots of them in tennis, but my real passion project was, I said, look, it's all well and good to say you're part of the group that changed Canadian tennis, but what have you ever done locally? And I took on this project to try to build an $18 million facility. Well, it was actually about $11.5 million plus other things, 18-court facility in our province that's completely not-for-profit, and our goal was to turn it over to a provincial tennis association. We didn't have 2 cents in the bank. We didn't have any land, and we had tons of obstacles in the way, like tons. And there were times during when we were, this was a 12-year project, and we had more adversity during that project where people just didn't think we could get it done. Because some of the government funding wasn't coming through, the private sector funding wasn't entirely coming through, but we kept driving and driving and driving. It was the relentless focus, believing in the project, continuing to articulate the value of the project, and making sure that while we lost people, you hung on to those core people that supported you and that were equally resilient. And I was a bit stubborn, maybe a little bit pigheaded about whether we could pull this off. But in the end, we ended up with this 18-court facility, one of a kind in Canada, where our small little provincial tennis association that used to have 2 employees and 1 part-time now has about 45 employees and a thriving tennis facility. So when you say, what's being down, love 40, that is when you put your, I'm using too many metaphors, but you put your shoulder to the wheel, you surround yourself with really good people, you believe in yourself, but you also believe in the goal. And the goal is the most important thing. What can we do? What impact will this have? And it's a lot easier when it's a passion play. And obviously, there was a lot of passion associated with this facility, and it's up and running and doing really well and delivering on our 2 main objectives, which is to make the game more accessible year-round and to develop higher caliber players. We now have 2 players in our Tennis Canada National Training Center within 3.5 years. And but it's, you know, it's good team, stick with your vision and be stubborn and resilient even when you're getting hit by some tough news.
I'm inspired. And Jack, I thank you for your response there. I mean, you're the perfect embodiment of the fact that, you know, people who get to the next level consistently don't think like everybody else. You know, people who get to the next level do not think like everybody else. And you've been able to conceive and execute big visions one after another and again and again. Because of your passion, I want to give you just a 2-minute platform here where you can share with us what you've got going on today in tennis and what you're really excited about, you know, on a global level, on a national level, you know, in Canada. What's got you going and jumping out of bed every day?
You're only going to give me 2 minutes. I could take an hour, but let me give you two that are, and I'm going to think globally here. This is a plug for the International Tennis Federation. I've been, as I mentioned, 15-year, coming on 16-year, a board member of the ITF. Global tennis is not healthy unless the ITF is healthy. We've taken a number of really, really bold steps in the last number of years. We were thought of as slow to react, not creative enough, not ambitious enough, and so on and so forth. In the last number of years, we have changed a number of very significant issues, completely changed Davis Cup, completely changed Fed Cup to Billie Jean King Cup with equivalent prize money, completely revamped the entry-level pro events, created the world tennis number, dramatically improved the world juniors and how they work. We are, I think, becoming a much better force and a much more important force in shaping global tennis development. And I just finished a project just 3 weeks ago. We had a 4-year governance review. And people say, oh, what the heck does governance have to do with tennis development? And my answer was simple. It was better governed and run organizations are simply more effective. They are just more effective at achieving their goals. And sport has gotten a black eye over the years, in particular international sport, for corruption, for poor ethical practices. And when that happens, your stakeholders don't have confidence in you. We completed a 4-year complete revamp. And remember, we've got over 200 members. We've got like 213 member countries in this organization. We're trying to change the legal framework of our constitution. And people kept on saying to me, why does that matter? And my answer, and we had lots of challenges along the way, but my answer was, if you expect players to play by the rules, not to be involved in doping, not to be involved in betting, not to be involved in practices that don't live by the rules of tennis, why don't we as an organization also aspire to the highest standards of governance to make our organizations, whether you're in a very small country or the U.S. Tennis Association or the French Federation, why don't we also aspire to deliver our sport in a way that's ethical, that lives by the best standards, that have good financial practices, an organization that people want to invest in? And we didn't have huge corruption problems. We didn't have corruption problems at all. But I think this puts us on a much better platform to be a much better organization. And that's what I'm really excited about, what's happening at the ITF and this slice of it, as well as a lot of the other things we're doing is great. And I've also just been given the chairmanship of the development advisors, which is the development group that decides how we spend all of our money globally. And that's my new challenge.
Well, maybe we can get you here to the U.S. and you can run for president in 4 years. So it looks like that's the only trophy that is not on your mantle. Jack, one piece of wisdom that you would leave behind for your family and the next generation of leaders.
Oh, look, it's all about pursuing your passions. That is who you are. Passionate people, people who care about, any organization that I try to touch, I try to make it better. And I think we all have that obligation. Making it better might be making it better for your community, making it better for tennis, it's one of my passions, making your law firm better. I think that what people will live longer, they'll be healthier, and they'll be happier if they truly grab on to passions, not just for their own benefit, that's really important, but for the benefit of others. How can you move something along in a passionate way that makes it better and a whole bunch of people can benefit from it? And because we all, it's a part of the pay it forward, we all have obligations. We have all learned from our mentors. We've all learned from people who have given us so much. And we all have big obligations to our society or to the things we care about to continue to contribute.
Jack, I want to thank you for your time. You truly are an innovator, a builder. You're an entrepreneur. You're a leader. You're a founder. You're a volunteer. And just a good guy. I mean, you're so passionate about what you do and your ability to communicate how we can help others succeed, which is my definition of coaching, helping others succeed, is really inspiring. You know, I just can't say enough. The audience is going to gain so much value from this time that we've spent together. Jack, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Rene. And this is a great platform, and I'm delighted that you do this with people because this helps to inspire people to get better. And we all need to get better.
Thank you. Yeah, it's my form of giving back through tennis and what I've learned. So, Jack, thank you again. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Rene. Okay. Bye-bye.
All right.